So I think this is an impressive crowd, considering it's Friday. Don't tell, I was in the lagoon this morning myself, and it was fabulous. Highly recommend it. So today I'll be talking about guava. A lot of my program is based on fruit quality. When I started this position 1 year ago, 1 year and 1 month ago, and I showed up and there were guavas just sitting on the little trees, and so I'm like, well, let's do a guava project. So this is what we have here. I'll tell you a little bit about where I am for context, a little bit of the experimental setup, but it's very simple. Some of our results, and then we'll conclude. So I am at the Tropical Research and Education Center. It's at the bottom of Florida, almost. There's a couple of keys below us. We have 160 acres, which is one of the things that attracted me to this position. There's plenty of space. You almost never have that. With 17 faculty, we've hired about 7 new faculty in the last 14, 15 months. There's a lot of energy from new people coming in, including the first fruit breeder. We have everything from fruits to vegetables, ornamentals, pathologists, entomologists, soils, hydrology. It's a very dynamic system. And what's really nice about it is that we have a critical mass. So when I've got a problem with a pathogen, I go to the tropical fruit pathologist. If I've got a water issue, I go to the hydrology people. And because it's a smaller group, it's not like walking all the way to the next building on campus to people you don't know. We support a $1 billion local agricultural economy. Number one is ornamentals. Number two is our food crops. You can see on the Florida map, that's where we are right down south. I don't have a picture of Irma. I will say that Irma did significantly impact this presentation itself. But we still have some good things to show you. Number one, I'm going to start with a lie. I promised 20 varieties. It's a good lie. I'm going to give you 26 varieties and 8 unknowns. So you're getting more for your money, right? So that's not bad. We took guava fruit and we sampled them at 3 stages. Immature, so about 1 inch in diameter. And then we took green mature and yellow mature fruit. The green mature is actually commercially viable in southern Florida. It's eaten fresh, it's crisp, kind of like you'd eat an apple, but with all the seeds in the middle. It's actually quite good. It's refreshing in the heat of the summer. We took a number of fruit quality traits, including Brix, pH, titratable acidity, and aroma, but because of an error in processing, there's no Brix data to present. We have both the red types and the yellow types, but mostly the reds are for the mature fruit market, and then the yellows are for this immature market that you'd eat like an apple. So we measured these varieties by tree, and I'll explain that the reason we have so many unknowns is because of things like Irma, where you have a hurricane that comes in and it relocates your plants for you. Then you go and you try and figure out where they went, and you can imagine if you do this over 20 years, things get a little bit messy. So we would go in and we were sampling and we knew that this variety was supposed to be white and it was actually a red fruit. So we automatically knew that it wasn't what it was supposed to be. So those became unknowns. If you look at the graph on the left, this is the differences in pH. And then going from dark to medium to light gray, you can see how the pH changes across that developmental series. We do see significant differences, but I can't make any comment on whether that's significant at the sensory level. But we do see some genotypes that are lower and higher than others. The same is true for titratable acidity. We have some standout genotypes, or trees in this case, some of those that have much higher potency of titratable acidity. We found a correlation using a quadratic here, R-square of 0.89. between titratable acidity and pH. And depending on your purposes, it might be good enough just to measure pH. It's a lot faster and requires less specialized equipment if this is valid across other locations and things. And you'll also see the different colored gray circles are, again, those immature, mature green, and then this commercial yellow type. And those are spread throughout. Aroma analysis is challenging for anyone who's ever done aroma analysis, and we're still working on this. It'll be published soon. But what I wanted to give is just a general overview. What you're seeing here is relative abundance of just 3 different volatile metabolites. These are metabolites that are similar across just everything. If you're a guava, you've got this metabolite. So we see things that are similar across everything. We also see, as you might expect, a number of these volatile metabolites that are induced only in the ripe fruit. So, for example, these metabolites, if you were eating the green immature or the green mature fruit, you wouldn't necessarily get any of these flavor notes. So for some of us that are turned off by some of those heavy sulfur compounds in guava, then this might help us to target some of those consumers in the green market. And then the other hand is if any of these are actually important for sensory, you'd want to make sure that those are present in the selections that you made. And then we have presence and absence in a number of these aroma compounds. If we were ever to pursue something at the genetic level, this would be a great way to go figure out what those underlying genetics are, because it's a much easier phenotype to work with than a 20% or a twofold or a fourfold increase in these aroma compounds. Because I couldn't help myself, we did a little bit of clustering on 52 of these aroma metabolites. And the most interesting clade is shown over here with the yellow box, that these are all yellow mature genotypes. And then the green immature and green mature are spread throughout the rest. So just in conclusion, we did find significant differences for guava in our accessions at Trek, which means if we choose to go forward, that we have a lot of diversity that we can play with already. We have not done sensory evaluations, so we don't know if any of these are really more than statistically significant, if they're consumer significant. Some of the unknowns, we believe, are actually hybrids because they are so very different than anything else that's actually out there. So again, that might be something we'll go out to see if there's any beneficial qualities, and that'll save us 5 to 10 years because we've already got a mature tree and lots of fruit we can test. And then we've got multiple opportunities for guava markets. As growers come to us, they're looking for niche opportunities. So whether it's guava or any number of the other species that I handle, we can start to make recommendations based on what consumer segment they're targeting. And that's what I have for you today. Thank you. Should have brought another presentation. Maybe mango would be more exciting. The short answer is that this is probably my first and last guava project. It means a lot to the few. So we have a lot of small growers. And so guava is important, obviously, to those who grow it. Not necessarily a large player. I don't know the dollar value. But some of the major challenges with guava aren't necessarily the fruit quality. It has to do with the production and insect pests that have to be managed by bagging fruit individually. And it makes it much less attractive. So while we can work on guava, there's probably other commodities. I know there are other commodities that would be much more useful for our time to help the markets as a whole. Plus, I personally don't like guava all that much. So. Is this recorded? I believe it's recorded. Anything else? That are standout. So it depends on the metric that you're interested in. I mean, we didn't take any yield data off of these because of the design of the field. It wouldn't have been appropriate. But what we can do is to start to look at things like these two broad markets. If you want something that's crisp and immature, they don't. Mostly, though, that consumer segment doesn't want something that's heavily aromatic. So we could actually go in here and look against some of those sulfurous compounds that really give you that tropical flavor to it. And these accessions are all available to the growers. Some of them are popular. Some of them are pretty much unknown. So there's still a lot to look at in terms of what does the grower actually want? Is it worth it to them to get cuttings and plant out what we have versus maybe switching to another commodity at this point? So to permanently identify or at least to conserve our germplasm, one of the methods we use now is actually replicating our genotypes across multiple sites. Unfortunately, we can't go that much farther north, and if you go much farther south, it's hard competing against real estate. And so we can move our stuff up to the USDA station in Miami, for example, but they got hit just as hard as we did with Irma. It's only up the road 40 minutes. We do have opportunities to send our stuff to Puerto Rico or perhaps out here to Hilo. Otherwise, I'm not aware of any markers that we could use, and especially how economical it would be. Usually if the tree falls, you just let it go, because there are much more important things to take care of right after a major hurricane than the guava block. I have pictures of Irma if anyone wants to see it. You'll see our priorities. Tree on building, that one gets before the guava. I was quick. I should have done two presentations. You want? Can I pull up on my phone? Can I cast onto this? No, this would be, so volunteers from the collection itself. So it's not, it is maintained, but this would have been something that ripened and fell and then sprouted in a spot that was reserved for something else that was removed by a hurricane or by disease. Yeah, so we have some fabulous guava pastries and some other value-add products. How much of a difference this type of information will make there is probably minimal when you take a guava paste and you dump a bunch of sugar and fat onto it. The nuances of a few metabolites isn't going to make a big deal, big difference. And I'm not aware of anything being done with strawberry guava at all. And we've got collections of random stuff that we're not doing with. We don't even have that one to not do anything with. Does it grow well here? We might not be allowed to grow it. If it's dispersed by birds and things, then it might be on our list of Alan Chambers, do not bring this into Florida. That's the proper name, AAC, do not bring it to Florida. Which what? So we used SPEMI. And then GCMS. So we have collaborators at the USDA in Fort Lauderdale. So we use the SPEMI fiber. It's a triphase. And then headspace analysis, which makes it hard for some of the sulfur compounds, but it's what we had, and it worked well for a lot of them. What was the what?
The error.
This was a communication error. We'll call that learning curve. When we processed the samples, this was when I didn't have anything in my lab. I'm actually in a temporary lab space. So when you blend the samples for aroma analysis, it's a 50-50 with saturated sodium chloride. And then we send that north, and it turns out that sodium chloride sends your soluble solids right through the roof. I wasn't aware of that limitation, and it was either, well, we could use that same puree and do an LCMS, but it wasn't worth the investment. And so now I know we need to send multiple samples. We're bringing a lot of this stuff down to my lab. Not the GCMS stuff, but the bricks and the titratable acidity. So we can do it there. And there was no sample to go back and dig into to resend.
Okay.